We have Roy Smalley. We have LaBelle Neal. I'm Jim Suhan. This is Chin Music, our baseball show at TalkNorth.com. We'll talk baseball, but let's talk about what happens inside the game of baseball, underneath the belt, underneath the brim of the cap. Let's talk about foreign substances and spin rates. Let's face it. We're talking here as the Yankee series is ending. Houston Astros is about to come to town. It's a good time to talk about cheating in baseball. Roy and I have had a lot of good conversations about this over the years. It's unavoidable right now with Josh Donaldson making himself the point person on the committee to end all pitching cheating in baseball. Let's start with Roy and his experience. You know, Roy, we know that there's always been some level of cheating in baseball. And we know that when it's steroids or it's, trash cans being smashed together to signal a batter, all of a sudden we decide that's too much cheating. Have you ever come to grips with where the line is? You know, what line should we not cross? What line is something that really needs to be dealt with? And what kind of cheating is just kind of quaint old school baseball?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody has the stomach for quaint old school baseball anymore. I mean, besides me, it's becoming a new era. I don't know if it's already arrived with a huge percentage of devotee, but the game, the old school stuff in terms of unwritten rules, in terms of sliding into pivot guys at second base, in terms of of bat flips and not showing the other team up and all those kinds of things. It feels like it's falling by the wayside, and there's a fair amount of all of that old school stuff that I think, for reasons that we've talked about before and we won't go into again now, there's a place for it, and I am saddened by the fact that we're losing most, if not all of that. And I've always been kind of bemused. With pitchers cheating, we've talked about this before. Guys have been trying to figure out ways to scuff baseballs up. And Thurman Munson, when he was alive and was one of the best players in the game catching for the Yankees, he'd have the Yankee Stadium ground crew would wet down the area around home plate, and if and when they got it a little too muddy around his feet, he would feign losing his bat. Could receive a pitch, feign losing his balance with the ball in his right hand, stick it down on the ground in the mud to catch his balance, and throw it back to the pitcher so there was mud on the ball. I mean, there's been all kinds of great stuff. You know, guys using their belt buckle to scar the ball, scratch it up. And Joe Niekro's nail file and emery board. Gaylord Perry, with all the machinations that he would go through trying to get in hitters' heads about when he was loading up and when he wasn't, and how they made him almost undress on the mound trying to find it, and all that stuff. I think is kind of old school, romantic. But where I think we're getting to now, I don't have a good answer for this. I really don't. I don't have a good answer for why hitters can use pine tar to get a better grip of the bat, but pitchers can't use pine tar to get a better grip of the ball. And I'm, pro hitter, anti pitcher most of the time about stuff like this, but I got to be honest, I don't have a good answer for that. So I think they're in interesting waters here, trying to figure out how they're going to enforce the no foreign substance rule for pitchers in the face of batters getting to use pretty much anything they want.
Yeah, it feels like a desperate plea to get a sponsorship from Home Depot. It's like I didn't know what spider tack was before. Now I know what about eight different foreign substances are. From a writer and fan perspective, Lavelle, at what level does cheating start to bother you?
Well, it starts to bother me when you're doctoring equipment, you know, when you're putting stuff on balls, if you're corking bats, you know, that's when it seems like you're trying to get too much of an edge. But the thing is, though, we've blurred these lines so much, you know, because Jim, you and I have covered Twins pitchers who have had pine tar on the bills of their cap, and they're
some of our favorite pitchers used a lot of pine tar.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody looked the other way, and there was nothing wrong with it, you know. And hitters were happy because, okay, you can hold on to the ball. It means the chances of me getting hit in the head are a little bit less, you know. But now players have taken it a step further, and now you've got a situation here where the league is forced to do something about it. And it's not like the old days where, you know, you could police these things on the field and everybody would be fine with it. Things have changed. People get butt hurt really easily now. If, you know, 20 years ago, if Yermin Mercedes swings at a 3-0 pitch from Williams Astudillo and gets thrown behind, then that's it. It's end of episode. No, but now everything's sensitive and umpires have to give out warnings and whatnot. You know, I remember I covered a game in Colorado. The Twins were in Colorado, and the Rockies had a runner on second. Levon Hernandez was pitching, and Levon suspected that the base runner was tipping his pitches or signaling what was coming next from second base. So he calls time. He brings in the middle infielders. I can't remember who they were, and they have a brief conversation. So Levon gets back on the rubber. And then he spins around as if there's a pickoff playing a play, but then drills the base runner in the stomach with the ball. Everybody just stood there in shock, you know. But obviously everybody said, oh, he must have thought the base runner was tipping his pitches to the batter. So, and there was no retaliation from Colorado's side. Everybody went forward. If that happened in today's game, there'd be a brawl. So, so it depends what everybody's individual line being crossed is in terms of doctoring equipment to use it to your advantage and how much you're willing to take and what ramifications are there if an opposing team feels that someone is cheating or what's going to make an umpire be suspicious if something's going wrong. Are they going to have like Rapsodo machines now? Giving readouts to the umpires. Oh, your spin rate was 250 revolutions faster than it was in your last outing. Empty your pockets. You know, is that where we're headed? I don't know.
That's what baseball needs is more technology. I mean, that's the easy answer, right?
Yeah.
Hey, this is part of the TalkNorth.com podcast network. All the shows are at TalkNorth.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod to see the shows as they are released. The best way to listen, subscribe to your favorite podcast app. It's free. It just makes things easy. Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. And thank you to Better Edge. We'll tell you about a special deal with Better Edge through this show later on. And also thank you to Minnesota Propane Association. I'm using propane every day, even in this heat. I lived in Texas. I like heat. I can handle it. I will say we're doing this show on Thursday afternoon. Today is the first day I didn't feel like being outside. Today's the first day I opened my door, walked out and thought, a little too much. But I will be at the ballpark tonight to write about the Twins and Yankees. And I guess we need to talk about the Twins. They are not playing very well right now. So let's start with something hopeful, and then we'll get into the problems facing this team right now. I will say that on Wednesday night, in an otherwise, you know, kind of hopeless game, you did see Polanco plant himself and really rip a couple of home runs off really good pitchers. Those weren't, you know, like just bottom feeding middle reliever type home runs. He hit home runs off quality pitchers. Miguel Sano went the opposite way. You know, twice for two hits, one of which is a home run. The numbers are not great for either of those. Let's again start with Roy. Roy, do you see any hope that those two can break out and be the hitters they're supposed to be?
There's no doubt in my mind about Polanco, and maybe I will be proven wrong ultimately, but that kid has just always looked like he could hit. He believed he could hit, and he would hit. I remember back a couple of years ago, he went through one streak. I think he went home. Was it Lavelle? Did he go home and like his grandmother died or something? He came back
It was terrible.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, he was terrible when he came back.
Yeah, he was just terrible. I mean, like he was, you know, 0 for a million. And I mean, he was hitting, I don't know, he was hitting a buck 80 or something for quite a while in that stretch. And then all of a sudden he found it again and just lit it up. Much more like what he's done here the last 6 or 7 or 10 games, whatever it's been. And I think he's going to hit. He's been through these kind of things before. I don't think he's panicked about him. And now I'm starting to see him swing the bat again. So, no, I really don't know what to say. It's encouraging to see him hit the ball the other way. Everybody knows how I feel about Miguel Sano hitting the ball, you know, from left center to right center, or even from left center to straightaway right field. I'm just not convinced yet that he's trying to do that when it happens. A lot of times he's just late, and he's so strong. It has so much talent that it doesn't matter. I mean, the thing about Miguel Sano is it's frustrating for me, and I think a lot of Twins fans, because of for me, how much I like the young man. I just like him. I want him to do well. As importantly, he has tremendous strength and talent that's God given that most of us don't get. And I look at what the kind of hitter I think he could be, and maybe that's unfair. You know, maybe some of us are just programmed from early on with hitting mechanics that are going to be our hitting mechanics. And we can try to work on things and do different things. But it's quite conceivable to me, as much as I'd love this to happen, quite conceivable to me that Miguel Sano will never be able to develop the kind of mechanics that Miguel Cabrera has had, or Kirby Puckett, or, you know, Mike Trout, even, as you know, Mike Trout's one of the best middle of the diamond hitters that there is, and it's why he's one of the best hitters that the game has seen. Maybe that's unfair to think that Miguel can do that. What he can do is hit 30 home runs because 30 pitches will show up and that will go out of the ballpark. He can't help it. If he plays a whole full season, there might be 100 pitches that show up that he might hit out of the ballpark, but 30 of them are going there. And so then you just have to decide, if you're the Twins, you have to decide, you know, how much is it, you know, worth it to them to have a guy hit 200 or maybe a little better, hopefully, and hit 30 home runs. And sometimes gigantic home runs. And that's the thing about him, too, that's head-scratching is he can look like he's totally lost at the plate. And then he comes up in a big situation. He's up in a lot of big situations. And most of the time, the feeling is he doesn't have a chance here against this particular guy in a big situation. This guy's got too good of stuff. And then he hits a three-run home run or a grand slam or a go-ahead home run to the opposite field in the bottom of the eighth. And ultimately, you just have to decide. You know, what are you going to do with that talent and that strength, even if he can't totally get every bit of talent out of himself just because of the natural hitting mechanics that he has, and it's just not going to change.
And you know, the thing is, Lavelle, that his good, we know what he can do during his good stretches. As Roy just alluded to, he can carry a team for a week, mm-hmm. maybe even a month. The question is, can he learn what to do when he's not on? Can he learn to be a battler? Can he learn to be the kind of guy? Because, you know, listen, I covered Kirby Puckett, and Kirby wasn't always hot. But when he was cold, relatively cold, he would still get the occasional blue pit. You know, he would find a way to fight off a tough pitch and just maintain his statistical relevance during the downtimes. Is there any way Sano can do that?
I don't know, man. I'm looking. I think he was batting 166 right now. You know, he's threatening to reinvent the Mendoza line. The 180 may be like the Sano line or something like that. You know, I don't know if he. I think he just has a one track mind when it comes to hitting, and that's just to destroy the pitch and pull it into oblivion instead of going with the pitch more often. I don't know if he has the bat the ball skills like a Miguel Cabrera, you know, who could get a hit and get a couple of hits in between home runs. I don't know if that's in him. He's never really made that adjustment. You'd like to think there's something there that would be encouraging that he could change or become a decent average hitter. I mean, all he has to do is like get a hit. If he goes like 1-for-4 over his next like 10 games, his average is going to rise over 200. You know, that's how low it is. I just don't know anymore. The high percentage of strikeouts. I think he's a sail or fail, feast or famine guy, and I'd like to see him change. And maybe after he gets through this season, maybe he'll look back and say, "I've got to change the way I'm thinking at the plate about I want to do damage, or else I have to be smart about it." Because I want to see that part. I'll finish up on a high note. I still think Jorge Polanco is one of the better at-bat takers on the team. I rarely see him give away at bats. He's a good battler. He usually has an idea what a strike is. He chases a little bit, but not too terribly much. So I always have hopes that Jorge's going to get on a roll here and resemble the hitter he was a couple of years ago. But yesterday was definitely encouraging, especially the high fastball he pulled late in the game for a second home run. He really got around in that on that pitch. So I agree with Roy that I think Polanco's going to get back to where he was before, and I have a lot of doubts about what Sano can be going forward.
I do have a Sano statistic that shocks me that I want to get to. We do want to first, though, talk about Better Edge. Lavelle, why don't you tell us more about their company?
Hey, combine your love for competition, social, and sports with Better Edge, the sports betting exchange that actually gives back to its bettors. Better Edge is a brand new locally based betting platform meant to connect users and attempt to add some coin to the bank. Completely legal and 100% fun, compete against friends, sports insiders, and yourself with Better Edge in a number of different sports and event competitions. Use code CHIN, CHIN, for a free $10 when you sign up by visiting betteredge.com. That's BETTOR edge.com.
Thanks. Also, Minnesota Propane Association. As I said, I'm using my propane tank, my propane grill every day.
Hi, I'm Laura Shera. And do you really know what it costs to heat water at your home, cabin, or business? No? Well, we do. Based on data from the U.S. Department of Energy, the average annual savings for homes that heat their water with propane rather than electricity is $175. You can save energy and get 2.5 times as much hot water compared to the average electric water heater. Let's save energy and money with a cleaner, greener fuel. Propane. The right energy right now.
So, guys, Rod Carew was on the broadcast on Wednesday night, and while I was listening to him talk, I looked up his career stats, and I was just kind of moseying around on Baseball Reference, which we all do, and I saw his career OPS was .822, which, you know, pretty good for a guy who's known as a singles hitter. And then I just, out of curiosity, I flipped over to Miguel Sano's page. It was right after he hit a home run. Miguel Sano's career OPS is .820. It's almost identical to Rodney Carew's. And that, of course, we know the reason, because Sano hits home runs. But it just shocked me. Is there any credence or is there any relevance to that stat? Is there any way we should be looking at Sano in a different light when we see that career OPS? Lavelle first this time.
Well, I've always considered OPS over 800 is pretty doggone good. It's mildly surprising that Sano was, would you say, 820?
820.
Yeah, that's mildly surprising. A guy of his ability should be actually pushing 900, I would imagine.
Yes.
And Carew, you know, Carew's basically I don't know how many walks Carew drew in his career, but a lot of it's batting average oriented. I would also imagine that he got slugging percentage through a lot of extra base hits, and that probably was why his OPS was at .822. So two different style of hitters. Doing it two different ways, man. It's totally possible. Definitely the hitting element is why Carew's is over 800. And even though Sano's career batting average, I got to imagine, is in the 230s now, maybe less, it's being propped up by the home runs he hits. Oh, the other crazy stat about Sano is that he leads the Twins in RBIs. How about that one?
He leads them in home runs and RBIs, yes.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that, Roy?
Yeah, I think that stat just kind of accentuates what I've been saying is the quandary about Miguel Sano and why the manager and the front office is saying, okay, what should we do with this guy? He's hitting a .160 and strikes out all the time. And then here comes that OPS number. You know, I mean, in every game he's drawn a wild strike. You know, a fairly frequent at night for Miguel is to strike out three times and walk once, right? And so his OPS is okay in a night like that, just because he has gotten himself on base, and then when he does make contact, it's for extra bases, and sometimes all four of those bases. So that's, I think the stat just, as I said, accentuates what I was saying just a minute ago about, okay, what do you do? He's non-traditional. Let's put it that way. The one thing that I will say, I'd like to go back to something you asked, Lavelle, Jim, and that is, you know, can he ever be any different? And I think Lavelle's suspicion is probably right. What I was surmising, that, you know, maybe he'll never have the bat to ball skills that Cabrera has. But that's because of his mechanics and what he's trying to do. And I think he ultimately, you know, is proving to be, at least to this point, he's proving to be unwilling to get jammed. And, you know, the old hitting coach for the Twins, long ago when I was first there, Jim Lemon once said, he said, show me a hitter that won't be jammed, I'll show you a horse blank hitter, right? And his corollary to that was, look, no hitter wants to be jammed, but good hitters are they accept it. They're willing to be because of they're not willing to just flail away at breaking balls time after time after time because they're so intent on getting out front on a fastball that they swing at the first thing they see out of a pitcher's hand as if it's automatically going to be a fastball. And the thing about Miguel, I just wish that one very basic thing would happen, just one thing. If he doesn't want to make any other changes, just say, okay, look, with two strikes, and if they can throw it on the inside corner, they might break my bat. I'm going to get jammed, but I'm going to look for the ball out over the plate. I'm going to be ready. I'm going to watch it a little bit longer to make sure I identify the breaking ball. And if watching it a little bit longer with two strikes leads me to, 50 broken bats, I'm okay. We'd all be okay with that because those 50 broken bats, there's going to be 20 hits in there, and some of them aren't going to be broken. They're just going to be hit at the label, and he's still going to hit the ball out of the ballpark. So, I wish he would at least say, okay, striking out this much because I'm still so intent on fastball speed and hitting the ball to left field is no longer going to be acceptable with two strikes. I'm going to try to hit the ball in the opposite field. I'm going to be willing to be jammed. And if they throw me anything else, I'm going to be on it. Right. And I wish he would hit that way, for a lot of full at bats sometimes. But, maybe just that. Or the other thing that I would say is, okay, look, just look breaking ball for a while. Just take all fastballs, look breaking ball, hit some of those. So they quit throwing you so many of them, but see, that's where my personality. I have to be careful about injecting my personality onto what other hitters should do. My personality was, this ain't working. I'm doing something else, and I would change. I would try to hit the ball the opposite field. I would look for other pitches. I would do something. I would choke up. I would move up on the plate. I'd move away from the plate and close up. I would do stuff when I wasn't going good because I couldn't stand you know, doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I have to be, you know, I have to be careful, you know, projecting that on other people. I sometimes, you know, for some people that's, you know, maybe not the right thing, but I just look at that talent and say, why keep doing the same thing all the time?
Lavelle's happy to inject his personality into other hitters.
Yeah, I think they'd be better off. They'd be more well-rounded in more ways than one.
So we end up going in depth on Sano today and on, you know, cheating and all that stuff. I think some big topics we have coming up in future weeks, you know, taking a look at Rocco and the coaching staff. Do we feel like, you know, what they're doing has contributed to the difficulties, or whether it's just, you know, whether it's too simplistic to blame things on the manager and the coaches. We're going to talk about this core group of players and the next core group of players coming up with Larnick and Kirilloff. For today, let's get a final thought from each of the gentlemen. Once again, check out that Better Edge deal. Try it out. Let us know how it works. Thanks again to Minnesota Propane and our producer, Brandon Morton. We'll finish with Roy. So, Lavelle, give me a thought on anything in baseball, whiskey, blues, anything you want.
Well, you know, before this series this week, you know, fans in New York were really getting nervous about the Yankees. They got swept at home by the Red Sox. They had fallen to fourth place in the division behind the Red Sox, the Rays, and the Toronto Blue Jays. Fear not, Yankee fans, because all they have to do is just come to Minnesota because the Twins have gotten the Yankees hot again. Even Giancarlo Stanton, who couldn't hit a bull in the ass with a snow shovel for most of the last month, is hitting home runs again. So, you're welcome, Yankees. The Twins are here for you whenever you need to bust a slump.
All yours, Roy.
You know, this just reminds me of one of my favorite players of all time, Randy Bush. When we were teammates in 85, 86, 87, especially 85 and 86, which weren't you know, two great years for the Twins before we won in 87. But we'd be talking. We talk baseball all the time, talk hitting, talk other players. We were talking one time, the Orioles were coming in, we're in town, and I said to Bushy, I said, man, have you seen, you know, Cal Ripken's numbers lately? He is really scuffling. And Bushy looked at me and that knowing look, and goes, hey, don't worry, we'll get him going. and it would be you know, three games and nine hits later, and he'd hit 400 for a month. So sometimes teams have that ability for other teams that, like as Lavelle is referring to. I just want to say the thing that's disappointing to me most of all, and it does have something to do with it's not the pitching, it's not the hitting. You know, you go through streaks, you go through you know, times when guys aren't pitching well and guys are then hurt. I mean, You're pitching Dobnek instead of Maeda. You know, I mean, there's just all kinds of things going on. But what disappoints me the most is it seems like every game the Twins are doing something uncrisp, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From a let's play good baseball standpoint, it's always something. And it's okay, so Pineda, you know, muffs up that ridiculously easy ball bat. He's pitching great, and he costs himself a run and a whole bunch more pitches because he can't field a roller that I was rolling to my 5-year-old grandson the other day. Then there's a ball in the lights at third, and then the third baseman cuts off a ball. You can't cut off this throw from the outfield. You got a chance to get the guy to plate, and then. You know, something is always happening that's when you at the end of the game, you said they didn't play crisp baseball. And, you know, that's where if I were the manager, I would be pulling my hair out a little bit, because it's one thing for your lineup to be decimated and you're not hitting because of it or different things. But to make some of the mistakes that they've had with a relatively veteran club, you know, being, you know, making the mistakes that's disappointing.
Well said. We'll talk more about that here in the coming weeks, or maybe the Twins will actually start playing well. We can talk about something else, but whatever happens, we will enjoy doing this show. Thanks for listening to TalkNorth.com, and we'll have another show out for you next week.